Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Tuesday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us tonight. We will have you for 2 hours. We've got a lot coming up on the program this evening, as we've got a few guests that are going to be joining us here over the next 2 hours or so. Coming up at about 6:20, so in about 10 minutes, Steve Greenberg, Chicago-based sports writer, will join us. We'll talk college football, college basketball with him, talk a little bit about the Fighting Illini. And, you know, while he's on, in honor of Chris Ranji, we'll probably ask him about the Chicago Bears, because that is a disaster of all disasters, and it's gotten to a point where it's so bad that they've gone from being kind of a local regional sports story to being a national sports story with just how much of a disaster it is with the Bears. And it's kind of funny to watch from afar, unless you are a Bears fan. When we, a couple Thursdays ago was Halloween, and my daughter went trick-or-treating, and there was, we got up to one house, and, you know, when trick-or-treating now, a lot of times people have a fire, like a bonfire type thing at the end of the driveway, and they'll sit there so you don't actually go up to the door. And we walk by this house, and they have on their mailbox, it's got all this Chicago Bears stuff. And then the guy who's standing there is just decked out in Bears gear. And I say to him, "Oh, are you dressed up as a sad football fan?" Which I don't think he appreciated. But Kyle Sixta is here. Kyle, he also said, "I was the first person to say anything." What are we doing, people? Like, that's the low-hanging fruit of all jokes. How am I the first one to say that?
It's an absolute layup of a joke. Yeah. I'm shocked no one took it before you. If I would have gone to the house, I would have taken the joke.
Yes.
Everyone would.
Very easy joke to make. And shame on everybody who did not make that joke, who came in front of me. We should have just been wearing this guy out all night long, where he didn't want to even have his bear stuff on. So anyways, Steve Greenberg's going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. Next hour, our buddy Scott Braun from Foul Territory is going to join us. We'll talk all things baseball with him, including, and I'll get into this a little bit on my own before we get done today. The stadium situation with the Tampa Bay Rays is just crazy. They cannot play at Tropicana Field this year. So they're going to have to play in a minor league ballpark this upcoming year. Then after this year, they've got 2 more years before their new ballpark is ready to go. Do you go spend upwards of $60 million to fix the Trop when you're only going to be in there for 2 years? That's a good question. That is a big question right now, and we'll discuss that a little bit. Our weekly conversation with Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, courtesy of our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. That's going to air next hour as well. Doing a lot of Blues hockey this hour as we did yesterday, and we'll hear from Drew Bannister coming up later on this hour. He spoke with the media after morning skate today. Kind of the big news, if it is news, but the big news of the day, Matthew Joseph back into the lineup. He had missed a handful of games with an injury. He's going to be the right winger on the second line. That he'll also be joined by Braden Schenn and Dylan Holloway. Schenn's going to be the center on that line. Holloway is out on the wing. Pavel Buchnevich, by the way, not only is he back to center, he's the top line center today along with Jake Neighbors and Jordan Kyrou. So it's another game of just shuffling stuff around. And the bottom two lines don't look fantastic, if we're being honest about it. But they've got to bounce back. And I mentioned this with Kevin Wheeler last hour during TIPM. If they go out and play well tonight, doesn't matter if they win or lose. Like, it matters. But in terms of this conversation I'm having with you right now, it doesn't matter. If they go out and play well tonight, that doesn't tell me a darn thing about the team. Of course they're going to go out there. It would be a crazy thing if they didn't go out tonight and put a good effort on the ice. This team has got to be as locked in and as ready to go as they have been at any point this season. Coming off an 8-1 loss, coming off a game where internally players are saying that they saw other players quitting, where they're called out by the coaches, where they had a unique practice yesterday, really focusing in on some small things. Of course they should have a bounce back tonight. If they don't have a bounce back tonight, if they don't play well or at least significantly better, that tells you a lot about this team, and it's a lot of bad stuff that it tells you about this team. So it's one of these nights where if they play well, it doesn't tell you anything, but if they play poorly, oh, it tells you a lot. It tells you a lot. So again, we are going to hear from Drew Bannister coming up later on this hour to get into that. We're going to do a few other baseball things as well. Coming up later on tonight in about an hour and 45 minutes, it is the Tuesday night edition of the Gas House Gang. Tonight's going to be Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler. If you're not familiar with the Gas House Gang, again, that is something that's kind of, it is brand new here at KMOX, something that we just started here over the last couple weeks, as it's going to come your way every day live on the KMOX social media channels via video stream at, again, 12 noon. And then you can listen to it as a podcast, or you can listen to it on air weekday nights at 8 o'clock on Monday, Cardinals Mondays. It's myself, Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman, and Bernie Miklas, and then we pair off another day. So on tonight's show, it is going to be, I believe, Tom and Kevin. Yeah, it's going to be Tom and Kevin coming up later on today. So you'll hear Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler tonight from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, and hopefully you'll be able to enjoy that. By the way, for those of you who have been listening to it, if you have any, it's brand new, and we are trying to make it something that people enjoy watching and listening to every day. While I'm on the air, feel free to text in to me if you've got any comments on the Gas House Gang or things that maybe you'd like to see us do a little bit different. If you've got any thoughts, I'll take them. It's brand new, and we're trying to do things that people want to enjoy. So if you want to text in on that, you can do so. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. Always monitoring the text line during the course of this program. By the way, sidebar real quickly. All the time I'll walk in, and like in the middle of this show, somebody will send like a text into the Chris and Amy show. I'm pretty sure when Chris and Amy walk in the next day, they're not like scrolling back to Sports Open Line to see. So it's the same text line for every show on the station. So if you've been holding a thought that you want to share with Chris and Amy and you hold it till 6:15 p.m. and you send it there, it's probably not going to get seen by my good friends, Chris and Amy. All right, we will take a break, and when we return, we'll talk some college football, some college basketball as well. We are going to be joined coming up in just a moment or so by Steve Greenberg. He's with us next. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. We are very happy to be able to welcome back onto the program. He is a sports columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times, covers just about everything. We like being able to talk with him about college football and college basketball. He is Steve Greenberg joining us. Steve, we'll get to that in a second, but you're in Chicago. I can't help but ask you to start things off with, what is it like right now covering a Bears team that they've been dysfunctional at times, but it feels like right now they have found a new pinnacle of dysfunction?
They check all the boxes, Matt, on that front. There's no question. And kind of the perfect part about it, the bow on all of it, if you will, is that Matt Eberflus, the coach, is just really not good at the whole media thing. So he has a way of losing the press conference when times are bad by just obfuscation, by not being straight, by not calling a problem what it is, by belaboring the weirdness of it all. And so it just gets worse. It happened when Justin Fields was here, and that was a constant subject. It happened as Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator, was failing, and it lingered. And now it's going to be Eberflus's turn to, you know, do that if he desires to continue to make it hard to talk to him about, you know, his own job status, because he's a lame duck. He's the proverbial coaching dead man walking, nothing short of the extraordinarily unlikely turn of events that would be like actually beating the Packers, actually beating the Lions, winning division games, and going from what's now 4-5 to making the playoffs. Nothing short of that can save him. And really, there's just essentially no chance of that happening.
We have seen bad teams in the NFL just eat up and spit out good prospect quarterbacks, where if a young quarterback is going through head coach after head coach, coordinator after coordinator, they just never get a chance to be good. And these early years for young quarterbacks are so important. Is there forget what's happening with the team right now. How much worry is there right now about Caleb Williams getting caught into that kind of cycle?
Well, you know, when there's different people coaching, there's a different GM, there's a team president who wasn't there when they drafted Fields or when they drafted Mitch Trubisky. So some of it is coincidence, okay? Some of it. But there's also a lot to the idea that starting from ownership, the standard of the Chicago Bears is not what it is in Pittsburgh. It's not what it is in Green Bay and other places we could name, where, you know, you can count on things being done in a professional way, in a winning way. And so the Bears have never been like that. So there's, you know, I look at it kind of both ways. Caleb Williams isn't Fields, isn't Trubisky, and he's got different people leading him. Next year, he'll have entirely different coaches. But I worry about him a lot. I think everybody does, because of who's around him now. You know, for Trubisky, it was the Matt Nagy coaching regime that let him down. But it was substandard, and it was obvious that the Bears were out-coached regularly. And if you think about it, although they haven't played a division game yet, if you just think about what they have in Minnesota, in Detroit, in Green Bay, they'll be at a coaching disadvantage in every single game, and games of import. And so it's got to take a toll on Caleb Williams' development, not to mention getting sacked as much as he's being sacked, running for his life. It's two-sided. It's development in the every day other than Sunday, and it's physical, of getting knocked around and never really having time to process an offense because he's under constant pressure. So is there a chance of this ending like it did with the last two number one picks? Absolutely. But Williams came in with a higher reputation, a perceived higher ceiling, better tools, all those things. I guess at this point, I think he still has every reason to end up in a better spot, relative to those two other guys, but it's still the Bears, and you're right to question it.
We're talking with Steve Greenberg from the Chicago Sun-Times. Switching over to Illinois football, throughout the course of the season, they all kind of the toss-up games they had won, and then the games you expected them to lose against really good teams like Penn State and Oregon, they lost until they played Minnesota, and that felt like more of a toss-up game, and they lost that one. They're coming off an off weekend. They're still having a really good season at 6-3, but was this a good regroup moment? Because we can kind of look at the Minnesota game as being the first time that they you could argue they maybe should have won a game or could have won a game and didn't?
Yeah, in 2022, you'll remember, Matt, they were 7-1, and then they lost at home as favorites against a losing Michigan State team. And then they lost at home in a sort of toss-up-ish game, but that they were favored in against Purdue. And it just kind of went off, you know, opportunity lost. And then the next year they had a 5-7 season. And so this was a flimsy 6-1 start. In you know, considering Illinois has no history of hasn't won 10 games since 2001, you know, this is it a mirage? And I think maybe what we saw against Minnesota is that to some extent it still is. It's a favorable schedule. You know, they make a big deal out of having won three top 25 games, and not many teams out there can say that. But the opponents, you know, were Kansas, which turned out to be what we've seen, a losing team, Nebraska, which has become a train wreck, and Michigan at the time, which, of course, none of those three teams gets any votes anymore, let alone is ranked. So those wins were kind of soft, and Penn State, Oregon, different stories. Minnesota really pushed Illinois around up front. So I think any game for the Illini is going to be really hard to win. At this point, they could still win the last three. I mean, it's a friendly schedule. It has been the whole way. And they've got, you know, Michigan State at home, go to Rutgers, play Northwestern at Wrigley Field. You could be looking at 9-3, maybe the world's least compelling 9-3, but they could get there. And that would be, for Brett Bielema, a high at Illinois. And it would, you know, go all the way back several coaches to the best season that the Illini had under Ron Zook, which would have been the last time they won 9 games. It's happened once in nearly a quarter century. So maybe it'll happen again. And I do think, you know, recruiting is supposedly coming along. Bielema feels great about that. He does feel like he's building. So, but we're in a time in college football when you either make the playoff, or you're irrelevant. Missouri's going to be going through the same reality. Mm-hmm. Better team than Illinois, but if they don't get there, same reality.
Yeah, the college football playoff rankings will be coming out later on, and we'll take a look at them. I don't know about you. I am most intrigued by this gaggle of two lost teams right now. We're talking Alabama and Ole Miss and Georgia and Texas A&M. There's a lot of SEC teams there, but even Clemson and Colorado and Kansas State, like schools like that. That, and I guess we can throw Missouri in there as well. They're 7-2. I don't think anybody's really thinking about them. All these teams have two losses. Some group of those teams are likely to find their way into this playoff, and I just don't know how to differentiate them right now.
And it doesn't matter if you differentiate them right now. I mean, it doesn't matter that the committee will differentiate that right now, because they're all still, you know, they're all still going to lose. They're all still going to play in these games that will define every week who can make conference championship games. If you're a two-loss team and you don't make your conference championship game, and you're not Alabama or Georgia, you know, or by this point, maybe Ohio State. I don't know if there are any other teams on the list. You're not going to make the playoff. Maybe Ole Miss, you know, or Texas. I mean, a lot of SEC in that theme. But these teams are going to have to get to conference championship game, which is in the SEC is going to be incredibly hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can talk about this, you know, glut of teams. Yes, I mean, you just named all these teams that could still make the SEC title game, and you didn't name all of them. But you still have to get to that game. The incredible thing is, if, you know, anybody who gets to that game and wins it, boom, you got a bye in the first round of the playoff, which is crazy. But yes, it is still, there's so many questions still. I mean, you know, the ACC, some team, SMU, Clemson, Miami, is going to have a top four bye into the quarterfinals and won't be nearly good enough to deserve it, unless Boise State winds up passing the eventual. Like, let's say, you know, Clemson or ends up winning that league with something like three losses, and is Boise State going to pass Clemson and get the auto bye to the quarters? So it's going to end up. There's so many things that can happen. I'm interested in watching it tonight, but it's crazy to say in mid-November, but it's still too early to make much out of it.
Last thing for you, and for folks that read you in the Sun-Times, your college basketball preview piece, it dropped earlier today at the Sun-Times website. College basketball season officially already is underway. You talk a lot about Illinois. Illinois right now is the top team receiving votes in the AP poll. They're a little bit higher when it comes to the coaches poll. Do you like this group that Brad Underwood brings in this year?
I'll tell you what I like about it, as somebody who writes about Underwood and Illinois, is, you know, everybody's question about Underwood, nobody questions his work ethic, because he's a maniac. He's in a good way. Nobody questions his recruiting. I mean, he was in the portal dealing with that as early as the Big Ten tournament, losing sleep and burning the candle at both ends. And, you know, he recruits very hard. He motivates hard. He screams and yells and coaches hard. And the guys who end up playing do play for him. But can he get a team to execute and beat really good teams? That has been hard. At Illinois, there's been a ceiling. They kind of crashed through it last season when they got to the Elite Eight, but then they played UConn, and, you know, an experienced, impressive Illinois team gave up like a 30-point run in that, completely fell apart, where Underwood, you could just look at that and say, my God, was he outcoached. So this season, after that long preamble, the entire roster's new, full of disparate parts, portal veterans, one potential one-and-done freshmen, two of them, Will Riley and Kasparis Yakachonis, who are, I mean, Illinois doesn't do the one-and-done thing. They've got two guys who might fit that description. And just so an array of pieces, none of whom have played together before, but with a very high ceiling. Like, this team shoots the three potentially as well as any team in the country. They have incredible length, incredible athleticism. It's the most talented team Underwood has ever coached, I believe that, and I don't think it's close. But can he pull them all together? He's never had to do that before. He's certainly never done it at an elite level when you look at, you know, the national picture. And that's what I want to see. Can he do that? If he can, he steps up into the, I think, you know, because of how much Illinois has won in the Big Ten, he's won more than even Matt Painter in the last 5 or 6 years in the conference. He becomes a real made guy in that league. But if he can't, then I'll still have questions about Underwood.
Steve Greenberg is a sports columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times. You follow him on Twitter at SL Greenberg. Steve, appreciate you taking some time with us. I look forward to catching up with you again down the line.
You got it, Matt.
All right, very good. Steve Greenberg with us on the program. Read him in the Chicago Sun-Times. Head to their website, chicago.suntimes.com, and does a great job, not just covering Chicago sports, but doing a lot of national stuff when it comes to college football, college basketball. All right, we'll jump back into Blues hockey. They are getting ready for their matchup against the Boston Bruins tonight. What did Drew Bannister have to say after morning skate today? We'll go through that coming up in just a moment on what's a, I think, pretty big game for the Blues this evening. That conversation is next here on KMOX. back at on KMOX. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line taking you till 8 o'clock tonight. So have you for another hour and 20 minutes in hour number two. Scott Braun's going to join us. He's part of the team at Foul Territory. We'll talk all things baseball with him. And we will also hear from Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, his weekly conversation with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. We'll air that for you coming up at about 7:35. Wanted to play for you some of what Drew Bannister had to say today. And the Blues are in action in just a while. Special hello to all the folks driving downtown, getting ready for the game tonight as, again, they take on the Boston Bruins. This is going to be an interesting game. I'm very, very curious to see what the Blues look like coming off one of their worst performances of the year, their second 8-1 loss in about 2 weeks, and their first 8-1 loss wasn't good. I'm not saying that whatsoever. But I would also say to you that the reaction and response to this most recent one against Washington, a Saturday night home game, losing 8-1, where after the game, players are essentially saying that other players on the team quit. Like, that's a really bad look. That's a really bad look for this team. And a lot of people have red flags up and out, and rightfully so. And yeah, is it one of 82? It is. It's just one game of the year. And I try not to make too big of a deal of it. But at the same time, I think if we dismiss it as nothing, especially when the team has lacked consistency this year, I think that's giving them a little bit more of a free pass than they deserve at this point. So we'll see what they do tonight. I would be shocked if they don't come out and play hard and put together a really good effort tonight. Win or lose, good effort. I would be, if they don't do that tonight, man, oh man, oh man, those red flags get larger and get higher. So my expectation is that they will do that, and then we'll watch and see how much that can stick around, if that's who they can start to really become and find some level of consistency. There's a few different storylines coming into this game tonight. Let's go through some of them and what Drew Bannister had to say about them. Blues are welcoming forward Matthew Joseph back into the lineup this evening. He's missed the last six games. He has been dealing with a lower body injury. This is what Bannister had to say about Joseph returning to the lineup.
He brings a lot of energy in the dressing room on the ice, and just the way he plays, you know, with his speed and his aggressiveness that we want to play as a team. So it'll be nice to have him back in the lineup tonight.
There's a lot of talk about individual performers when Drew Bannister was speaking with the media today. Scott Perunovich is coming off a game where he scored a goal for the first time. There's certainly been some question about who he is from a defensive standpoint. They really need him to be able to take that step forward, despite the fact that the team lost by an 8-1 score the last time out. Bannister was clearly happy with Perunovich's performance and hoping to see more from him.
Take away the game and how it went, I thought he played very well last game. And I saw him, a guy that was playing with more confidence and moving the puck. And, you know, he jumps into a hole there off a faceoff and scores a nice goal. But, you know, his overall game, I thought, was very clean. And I thought he was more predictable when he had the puck and he played quicker, which is what we need from our back end.
Looks like Pavel Buchnevich is going to be back at center tonight. In fact, he's going to be the top line center, as he'll be between Jake Neighbors and Jordan Kyrou, and then Braden Schenn on that second line with Matthew Joseph and Dylan Holloway. So Holloway moves from the center spot to the winger spot. After that, the bottom two lines, somewhat questionable just in the groupings. The Faxa line, he's at center along with Alexei Toropchenko on the left side and Nathan Walker on the right side. And Bannister was asked about that line specifically and what they are able to do.
Well, the communication part and getting to their game early, I feel like they push the needle for us. They're very direct in the way they play. They get on the forecheck. They're able to stall out pucks, and you know, and then they, you know, able to hold on, protect, you know, where other teams' defense down and forward lines.
And then that final grouping will be down at the bottom. The fourth line has Oscar Sundquist in the middle of Brandon Saad and Alexander Texier. So Texier is back in the lineup tonight. He was a healthy scratch on Saturday. Sundquist in that center role once again. And Bannister talked a little bit about what Sundquist can do for this team.
Sonny is a guy, you know, that you rely on. High hockey IQ and can bring a lot of energy to the game, the way he plays and his details in his game. So, I like the way our lineup looks here tonight with Sonny and Sauter and getting Tex back in the lineup. I think he's going to be excited to play and ready to go.
Yeah, really different looking groupings tonight, and I think you can clearly see kind of a differentiation between the top two lines and the bottom two lines and what you want to expect. I think there's more pressure on those top two lines to go out and have as much success as possible and to go out and score some goals this evening. And it's also important to play well in front of Jordan Binnington. I have to wonder internally what he was thinking to himself during that 8-1 loss where just nothing was going on in front of him. And he's back starting tonight. And Bannister essentially, I wouldn't say called out the team, but he made it very clear that the expectation is that the team plays better in front of Binnington tonight.
And I think we owe it to Jordan as a team to play better in front of him. You know, and I know our guys are going to be ready here for him, and I'm sure Jordan's going to respond really well too.
So that's an important part of this whole thing. Jordan Binnington has been the guy. This season doesn't look bad because of Jordan Binnington. And a couple comeback wins for the first couple wins of the year, the fact that they were able to win four of the first six. Since winning the four of the first six, since that point, they only have three wins to go along with, what is that, six losses? So it just hasn't been good here for a little while. Now, for it to be good, part of it is about playing with confidence. Thought it was interesting. Bannister talked about that today, about what he can do as a coach and what players can do individually to be able to make sure that they go out and they've got confidence on any given night.
When you talk about confidence, I think, you know, as a team game, I think, you know, being direct and being predictable makes it easy to play, you know, and when we aren't predictable on the ice, guys start second guessing, guys start, you know, trying to do other people's jobs. And, you know, but I think when you're playing predictable and you're direct, the confidence comes.
Yeah, I found that interesting when I was listening, because a lot of times in sports, predictable has a negative connotation. Like if you know what somebody is going to do, that's not good. But in this connotation, the way that the way Bannister is talking about it, it's very different, because you could almost replace steadfast for predictable. That could be another way that you could talk about it. Just guys going out, doing their jobs, doing their job appropriately, staying in their spot, staying home, like whatever stupid sports cliche that you want to use. That's what he's talking about when he's talking about the predictability. It's not about a guy on a breakaway always going after the goal in the same way. It's larger than that. It's taking a step back, and at any point, five guys on the ice, they all have their jobs to do, and them all doing it to a point where one guy doesn't look over and see another guy isn't doing their job, so they feel like, well, I got to do my job and I got to do this other guy's job, and then everything starts breaking down. Bannister said some interesting things that has really gotten me thinking over the last couple days. So this thing about predictability today, because I think, again, in sports, predictability has a negative connotation. He used it in a positive connotation. And then yesterday, again, I still chuckle the fact that, yeah, it's the first practice after that 8-1 loss, and he's blaming everything on line changes and the way that they go about line changes. Like, it makes you listen to what he's saying. Some of it, it's interesting. Some of it, you kind of shake your head at. But this team is obviously searching right now and trying to get better in a good number of areas. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
As the baseball season continues, or baseball offseason continues, is what I mean to say, the Los Angeles Angels have been kind of oddly aggressive, but aggressive in a passive way. And in a year where the Cardinals offseason is probably going to be a bit more subdued, maybe this is the year to, like, if you're following along with the hot stove, seeing what else is going on and see what's interesting. I'm not quite sure what's happening, because the Angels obviously have been a team with top-level players who have just not performed at a very high level. They can't make the playoffs. They're a disaster in many ways. So baseball is the sport where teams tend to lay back a little bit at the beginning of free agency. There's no salary cap like there is in the NBA and the NFL to push teams to go spend money early, because if you don't spend the money early, you may not get the opportunity to spend it. That doesn't happen in baseball, so teams tend to sit back a little bit. And then you have the Angels, who so far this offseason, they traded for a DH in Jorge Soler. They gave a pitcher in Kyle Hendricks a one-year, $2.5 million deal, which I don't even know what that is. And if you're Hendricks, it's a bad move, because it gets you out of the NL Central, because you're not facing the Cardinals anymore, because Hendricks owns the Cardinals. And then today, the Angels agree to a two-year, $12 million contract with catcher Travis d'Arnaud. D'Arnaud's a nice player. Like, I am in no way, shape, or form trying to say anything negative about Travis d'Arnaud. But Kyle Sixtell, I look at this, and you see this team in the Angels being the most aggressive team this offseason, but they're being aggressive for middle-level players.
It's really odd. Those are the guys you fall back on at the end of the offseason when you struck out on all the big-ticket items or the big-ticket players. You don't go out and get Kyle Hendricks as the first player off the board.
No, you don't. And this is an example of what I don't want the Cardinals to do. We talk so much about, if the Cardinals are going to be successful moving forward, they cannot go spend free agent money on middle-level players. Free agent money needs to be spent on high-level players. Middle-level players, end-of-the-roster players need to be produced and developed. And the Angels are spending lots of money on guys like this. To me, it says they're just going to be the same old Angels. We'll take a break. Have more in a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Back at it on a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. To take you till 8 o'clock, we are going to have Scott Braun joining us in just a few moments. We are going to talk with him all things baseball. He'll join us in 4 or 5 minutes, more like 10 minutes is when he's going to join us, and we'll talk with him. And then later on this hour, we're going to hear from Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs quarterback, for his weekly conversation. We are awaiting the college football playoff rankings, which will come out at some point in the next few moments. And if we get those before this segment comes to an end, we'll certainly pass those along. I think the thing I'm most interested in, we talked a little bit about this with Steve Greenberg last hour. There are so many two-loss teams from especially the SEC the SEC. This is a weird year when it comes to SEC football. And I understand why they have expanded the way that they have expanded. But in many ways, part of the power of the SEC, part of what has led teams to be able to dominate the top of the rankings, have been the fact that every year you're guaranteed to play a bunch of really, really good teams. And with the additions that they have done over the years, and the fact that they still could add one more conference game, and I think they should. There should be playing a PUD non-conference team at in November, and it just doesn't make sense. So I hope they add another conference game, which they can do, and it seems like something they want to do. But, I mean, Missouri's a really good example, and Missouri's not the only example of this. They had a very limited opportunity this year when it came to the signature kind of wins. When you look at their SEC schedule, now they went to Alabama, and I don't think anybody expected Alabama to be ranked number 15 when they played that game in Tuscaloosa. So the expectation for that game would have been that Alabama probably would have been a top four, top five, top eight team in the nation, and you can't do anything about that. But outside of that, they've got a game against Texas A&M. And they've just got a lot of kind of middle of the road teams, you know, good, not great teams. South Carolina, who they're going to match up against this weekend, that's going to be a really tough matchup. In fact, I don't think Missouri is going to win this weekend, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. I think South Carolina wins that game, but South Carolina is a good, not great team. Auburn was kind of I don't even know if they're good. Like, they're like good, not great would be the highest level for them. Same thing with Oklahoma, a team that they just barely beat, a Mississippi State team that's really not good at all coming up later on this year. And then Arkansas, I put them under the good, not great category as well. So when you've got all these teams in the league and there's more randomness to your schedule each year, you lose out on the opportunity to be guaranteed some of these really big opportunities for great wins. Now, the other side of that is, if you go take care of business and you've got a path to the SEC championship game, then you've got a path to the college football playoff that way. And I don't think Missouri has been eliminated yet from the college football playoff. I don't think any of these two lost teams from the major leagues. So, you know, the Alabama at 7-2, Ole Miss at 8-2, Georgia at 7-2, Texas A&M at 7-2, Clemson at 7-2. That Colorado at 7-2, my alma mater Kansas State at 7-2, Missouri at 7-2. All those teams, it's not an easy path, but I think you can find a path to the college football playoff with those teams, and that's good. That is good. You know, last week I say stuff, and then I think about what I said after the results of the weekend. So going into this past weekend in college football, I referred to a couple games as like college football playoff elimination games. And the two games that I specifically was speaking about came out of the SEC this past weekend. That Georgia-Ole Miss game, I thought that was a college football playoff elimination game for Ole Miss. And you know what? I would probably stand by that, because if Ole Miss loses that game, that would have been their third loss. And then, in many ways, I thought the Alabama-LSU game was a college football playoff elimination game. LSU, they're a three-loss team. So I guess I was probably right on all of that. But if Alabama loses that game and all of a sudden they have three losses, is there still a path for them? I mean, they're Alabama. Is there still a path for them to get into the college football playoff? Maybe. If Georgia loses another – Georgia, if they go lose another game here in the regular season, is there still a path for them to be a college football playoff team? When it comes down to rankings and things like that, I don't know. I've just been watching college football long enough and watched the way rankings go and the human element and all of that. And obviously, again, the main thing is, and there's so many, we don't have that much time left in the college football season, specifically to the SEC championship game. There are so many different things that could end up happening, so many different potential matchups for that SEC championship game, that we'll just have to wait and see. And all of a sudden, you could have a team coming in and crashing that. And I don't know if I love the idea of the conference champions out of the conference championship games being able to go in and get that first, that bye. You know, we talked to Steve Greenberg about it earlier. There's going to be an ACC team that's going to win the ACC and is likely going to get a bye, and they're just not going to be as good. Like the idea, I know there needs to be value in winning your conference, but I think the value in winning your conference shouldn't be that you get the bye. The value in winning the conference is that you get an auto bid into the tournament. That would be my takeaway on that, because there's going to be some teams. The team that wins the ACC could very easily, maybe even likely, will be outside the top 12. Are they deserving of going and getting a top four spot and a first round bye? I would argue no. Now, for the college football playoff to come together the way it has, all the conference commissioners and everybody had to agree on it. So that gets to a point, and we see this a lot in college athletics, and it's frustrating, where the best situation for the sport, for the game, is secondary to people who are advocating for their respective leagues and who they're paid to. Like if you're the commissioner of the ACC, of course that's what you're going to fight for. You got to fight for your league. That is literally your job, to fight for your league. But sometimes, you know, Mike Gundy's a crazy guy, and he says really, really dumb things, the Oklahoma State football coach. But one thing that he said that I did agree with to a certain extent is the idea of there being a college football czar. And if you remember, when he said all those things, he said a bunch of other stuff that I completely, completely disagreed with. But I would agree with the idea that I would like there to be some type of figurehead person who can keep the sport of college football as being the most important things when it comes to decisions that are being made. So I agreed with that part of what, and if you don't know what I'm talking about, you can go, I'm sure if you Google Mike Gundy, college football czar, you can find it. I think he argued that Nick Saban should get that position. And then he said a bunch of other crazy stuff. But sometimes I live in a utopian world, and I shouldn't. But in my utopian world, I would like for decisions impacting sports to be for the best of the sport and not for the best of individual parties that participate in that sport. We'll talk baseball with Scott Braun from Foul Territory. That's next. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on your home of the Cardinals, KMOX. Always love being able to bring on to the program. You see him. You literally see him if you're watching what was Bally Sports, now FanDuel. But if you were watching Bally Sports prior to Cardinals games, you saw the Foul Territory program, which features some former Cardinals on it, including A.J. Pierzynski. But Scott Braun serves as the host of that program. You can also watch it via their different social media channels. But Scott Braun rejoins us on the program once again. Scott, great to have you back on. Always enjoy talking baseball with you. How are you?
Matt, I'm great. Good to talk to you as well. Exciting times, weird times maybe for Cardinals baseball, but excited to get into it. I know it's maybe unfamiliar territory for fans for the most part.
They signed the new TV deal to stay on what is now FanDuel, and they took a 23% cut. And that may sound like a lot, but these other teams that are leaving Diamond Sports all the way, you know, together and are going to, producing on their own through the facilities of MLB Network, it feels like their cuts are likely to be much more than 23%. So with just a 23% cut on TV rights and sports gambling just being approved in Missouri, it feels like over the last week and a half, 2 weeks, from a revenue standpoint, the Cardinals actually did all right for themselves.
Yeah, I'm not the expert, and sure, I'm definitely going to be a bit biased because of where the show runs, but at the same time, I say whatever the heck I want. We're an independent show. I don't work for anyone else, right? Our show gets distributed in a number of places. So in my mind, I agree with you, Matt. I mean, if you look at what the situation is for some teams that are under the league's umbrella on the short term, it looks pretty dire because it's not set up to cover nearly the kind of fees that they were getting prior to linking up with the league. So I'm with you. It seems like the Cardinals made a very smart business decision. Of course, the sports betting in the state is going to be super helpful for the Cardinals. And for fans to keep in mind for all of this, they want the Cardinals as a business to be thriving because that means they'll be more active, not just in free agency, but I'm sure this has been covered on your show. They need to beef up the development, the instructional staff. Parts of the Cardinals that used to thrive were dumbed down a bit because they extended their budget on the player side. Now, I'm obviously going to make the case that you should do both. You're the Cardinals, but it helps if they make money. So I think it looks like a really good business decision on their front to make sure that they're thriving here on the short term and not losing a ton of money like some of these other teams are.
I don't know what it's going to look like this upcoming season. I don't think it's going to be quite as bad as some people think it's going to be. But in the long term, as they do redevelop player development, and they've got guys like Heim Bloom and Rob Serfolio who are now in the organization, it feels like they've got the right guys with the right track record to come in and fix those issues that you alluded to. From what you know about those two guys, and obviously Bloom has a long history between his time with Boston, but also more importantly, his time with Tampa. Are those the right kind of guys for this organization?
Yes, 1,000,000% yes. I think the Cardinals were ahead back in the day. It's not that far back, but when Jeff Luhnow was a part of this organization. And sure, he's definitely had an interesting career. You can track plenty of what he did over in Houston, but I think he was a star in certain aspects of the Cardinals organization, and then they were missing that for a while. I think Chaim Bloom's definitely going to bring that kind of vibe to the table, just in terms of information, technology, and just being head of the curve instead of right now what appears to be behind the curve. And you're right, he had a ton of success with Tampa Bay. And I'll quickly tell you the story in terms of what I think happened in Boston. The Red Sox suddenly have a stacked farm system, especially at the top. They have four or five top-end prospects. I believe they have the most in Baseball America's top 100 right now. I think they definitely have the most in the top like 30 or 40. I'm talking about Boston. And who did that? That's Chaim Bloom. So the problem in Boston was he wasn't executing trades that he wants. He had to trade Mookie Betts away. Those are all ownership issues. He wasn't given a clear-cut budget, and he was told that they weren't going to give Mookie Betts the money that he needs. That wasn't his fault. His job was to rebuild from within. I think he did that really well, and now Boston's in a good position if they ever want to spend again. So if you get the same kind of roadmap with the Cardinals organization, I think St. Louis fans should be pretty pumped. He's really well-liked. He's been super successful. So, of course, you're going to need that last rung when you get to that point, as they're in a little reload or whatever the heck they're calling it out there right now to rebuild. Then you need them to push their chips in once we're, you know, another year or two from now. I don't think it's going to take long, Matt, also because in the AL Central and the NL Central, rebuilds happen quicker. It's just the way the competition is set up, and that's a good thing.
The feeling around here is, you know, Wilson Contreras seemingly sticking around. He's going over to first base. Sonny Gray seemingly sticking around. Most people believe that they're going to end up trading Nolan Arenado. If they do, what spots do you think would he fit in well?
I'll throw one out there today that we talked about on Foul Territory. Eric Kratz said, what about Philadelphia? It appears that Alec Bohm is on the trade block. I wonder if that's maybe a long-term fit for St. Louis and somebody that they could look to sign to a longer-term extension as well. I think he's got maybe 2 or 3 years left currently. It certainly would save a ton of money, but also you'd have to attach someone big. So Kratz in that deal was attaching Ryan Helsley. I think Helsley's a lock to be traded this offseason. He's coming off such a dominant year for St. Louis. And when you're not in a position to contend, you definitely want to trade your high-leverage relievers. They're super volatile. They're very valuable. So I think a deal like that sounds pretty cool. I think it's going to be tricky, though. I mean, maybe you could make a case for a team like Houston or the Yankees. Both very much need third baseman. I think Josh Chisholm's going to be a second baseman for the Yankees, depending on, obviously, where someone like Alex Bregman ends up. But they're going to have to eat a significant chunk of money just based off the season Nolan had. Even if you do believe that he's going to bounce back, I mean, that's not what the market's going to say, right? If you're on the other side of the conversation, they're going to be like, yeah, you're going to have to eat significant money based on him being a league average offensive player, even if you believe that he's going to bounce back. So there's a couple ideas. Do you like any of them?
I think Philadelphia makes sense if Nolan is willing to go east. He seems like he's got full no-trade clause, and he's a West Coast guy. Now, Philadelphia can sell him on the idea that they're not far from winning a World Series. So Philadelphia, to me, makes the most sense if he is willing to go play in that city.
Okay, and for me, the West Coast is a little tougher to figure out right now. I don't think the Dodgers are going to be a play. I know that's been the dream for him, but I don't see it. And even from the people that I'm connected with, it doesn't seem like that's a big target for them. And of course, LA is going to be wrapped up already in all kinds of payroll situations where they want to spend in other places. And also, I think Max Muncy actually had a really strong defensive postseason and World Series and proved that he can be a guy there still for a while. So I don't know. I don't really see LA. I mean, obviously San Diego's not a fit, so I'm trying to figure out where Nolan would be happy, but I truly believe, Matt, that they can sell Nolan on moving to another place that's going to be contending next year, because you do a reality check, you haven't won a World Series, you want that chance, you're 34, you've got a few seasons left on a contract. I think Nolan's going to be into being sold to go elsewhere if, like you said, it's a team such as Philadelphia. They get rave reviews from their clubhouse. You're going to play with superstars. That's cool. That's a life experience. I think he'd sign up for that.
Last thing for you before we get you out of here. From a national standpoint, baseball's in a weird spot with a couple of venue things. We know all about the A's and going to Sacramento. But now Tampa, they're going to have to play somewhere else for sure this next year. And now the city of St. Petersburg has to figure out if they want to spend $60 million on a roof for a team to play in a ballpark for 2 years. This is probably not what Rob Manfred wants to be dealing with.
No, and this should be the only problem for the record that the league's dealing with. We should not have two minor league ballparks hosting major league teams next year. Yeah. The Oakland situation's just an absolute disaster. This is a natural disaster, so I understand this. And if a team has to play for a year elsewhere, it is what it is. But you're right, it's strange because that place is going to get knocked down. So you're like, are you going to spend all that money? And trust me, I'm never somebody who's going to give excuses to a league and owners and all of that when revenue's in the billions. But it does seem kind of like a waste. So I'm curious to see what they decide. I still think they're probably going to end up doing it. It's the responsibility of the city. They might fight it a little bit, but maybe ultimately that factors into what the new ballpark looks like. Maybe the Rays give in a little bit to what I've heard is some new politicians that have just taken over with elections down there that might actually balk at what that new stadium deal is. So it's pretty messy down there, but I have hope that they're going to figure it out and not end up playing in a minor league facility for you know, a few seasons. Because also think about this. There's enough devastation in that area, and I live in Orlando, so I'm nearby, that I could see them pushing back even the new ballpark plans by a year. I mean, don't quote me on it, but I wouldn't be surprised if that popped up just based on what's going on down there and the resources and how long it could take to build back up. So it's pretty messy, but that should be the only mess.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. Scott Braun, he is the host of Foul Territory. You can see it on all their social channels, on Twitter, on YouTube, and of course, you can see the cable linear version of it on FanDuel Sports Network Midwest as well. Follow Scott on Twitter, at Scott Braun. Scott, I always appreciate our conversations, and I'm sure we'll touch base with you again moving forward.
Yeah, great baseball talk. Matt, you're great. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thank you. Scott Braun joining us here on the program, and we do appreciate him taking a few moments with us. When we come back, we're going to switch gears, and we'll talk some football as Patrick Mahomes does a weekly conversation with Carrington Harrison of our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. Of course, KMOX is St. Louis's home for Chiefs football, and we've got that conversation with Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be coming up in just a moment. Right here on KMOX.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Continuing to take you till 8 o'clock this evening. Tonight, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, it is the Gas House Gang. It's going to be Tom Ackerman and Kevin Wheeler on the program tonight from 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, talking a lot of Cardinals baseball. But we'll get into the Blues a little bit, some college football as well. So that's coming up this evening, 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's that time of the week where we hear from Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. Each week, he does an exclusive interview with our sister station in Kansas City, 96.5 The Fan, with Carrington Harrison. The Chiefs, somehow, some way, they win again this past weekend, and they are just finding more and more unique ways to win football games, and that certainly was the case against Denver, a 16-14 win where they basically had a walk-off block of a field goal, looked like they were going to lose the game. And as Carrington Harrison started his conversation with Patrick Mahomes, the first question that was asked was kind of how this team keeps winning these close games in crazy, crazy kind of ways.
Man, it's just, we just go out there and play football. I mean, obviously, it's been close games a lot this season, but that just speaks to the culture that we have here and the teammates that I have around me. I mean, it takes everybody, and I think that was the biggest thing you saw from this week is that we're going to fight to the very end.
It was kind of hard to avoid it, but I'm sure you saw a lot of the Broncos fan reaction. Did you get a chance to see any of that on social media this weekend?
I honestly haven't seen much of it. I'm sure they weren't too happy, though, so I'm going to have to go check that out after this.
Yeah, I was just laughing about it because, you know, there's some Chiefs fans that just, like, hate John Elway and hate Peyton Manning for always beating their team, and I was thinking this weekend, like, there is a Broncos fan, like, a kid right now, 11, 12 years old, and, like, you were their least favorite player because you always beat their team.
Yeah, I mean, I had certain guys like that growing up, too. You always want your team to win, and I try to go out there and have fun and do it the right way, but obviously it's going to upset some people when you beat their team a good amount.
Patrick, take us inside the locker room because I'm guessing that was as spirited as hype of just a complete total team effort that you've been a part of.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the biggest thing for me is I've never been a part of something like that. I mean, I've been a part of some walk-off wins and some big defensive stops and stuff like that, big field goals, but to have a field goal block, I mean, obviously – we trust those guys, and they go through their week and find ways to find weaknesses within the special teams. But that's just such a hard play to do. And so for a guy to make a big play in that moment to win the football game as a kind of a walk-off, it was something that I'll have for the rest of my career.
I was just going to ask you, where does that rank in terms of regular season wins? You guys have certainly had some great postseason wins. Maybe that win you guys had early in your career against the Ravens with the big pass play on fourth down. I'm just trying to think of what's an exciting regular season win that you think would even rival what happened on Sunday.
Yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, like you said, that Ravens win, just because – it was so early in my career. Maybe the Chargers one when Travis has the catch and breaks all the tackles in overtime and scores a touchdown. That one's up there. But definitely one of the bigger regular season wins as far as momentum swings and emotion swings and stuff like that. And so it was definitely a really cool moment, man. I mean, just to be a part of, and I think you saw by the celebration by everybody.
What is it about the Broncos? Is it just the fact that they are a division rival? It feels like you've just played them really tough or something happened. You know, you had a significant injury against the Broncos. Your first start was against Denver. Monday Night Football with the left-handed throw. You've just had so many of these moments in your career, and they normally seem to happen against Denver for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good franchise and a really good football team. I mean, they play hard the entire game. They're well-coached. They got great players, and we always know it's going to be a challenge, especially in division and especially against the Broncos, because you know they want to beat us as much as we want to beat them. And so it's definitely always a challenge, and there's been some big moments in my career, but I'm glad that we were able to find a way to get a win in this one.
Right now we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick, we are coming up on a month of since the D-Hop trade. What have you learned most working with him over the course of the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think just the intelligence. I mean, he really is a football savant, man. He watches the little things. He really focuses on his craft, and that's what you want. I mean, not only on the football field, but in that room with all those receivers. He's a veteran guy who's done it at a high level for a long time, and I think he's just gonna keep getting more and more involved in the offense, and that's gonna keep getting other guys open. We left some stuff out there, not just me and him, but just in general as the offense. This last week, and we got to be better at executing there, and they'll take our best this week against the Bills.
And you describing him, I hear a lot of the similarities in how you kind of approach football and how you see it. What's been the process like to kind of get him up to speed? Are you and him watching extra film? Are you guys working together? What is the process to get him acclimated to this offense since he joined midseason?
Yeah, it's just a little bit of all of it. I mean, he's been in the building, I mean, just as much as I have, just learning the offense, learning how we do things, learning how we coach things. And then learning how I see the game as well, and I try to do the same for him. And whenever you get a guy mid-season like this, it's about getting him up to speed as fast as possible, and I think we've done a good job of that so far. But he'll continue to learn more and more each and every week, and I think that's a big thing for us as an offense going forward.
You mentioned a couple of missed throws from the last game. What's the throw when you went back and watched film? You're kind of like, that's one I should have made.
Yeah, I think the one to Trav was probably the biggest one, just because of the moment of the game, and then he was open, so just getting the throw down a little bit and letting them get a chance to go up and catch it in the back of the end zone, it just puts our defense in a better spot where they're not having to guard against a field goal and a touchdown, where they know what the Broncos need to get to, and they can coach that way. That was big. I mean, obviously the one to Worthy, I mean, you want to hit those deep ones. We've missed a couple of those these last few weeks, but kind of that was more of an off script, kind of going one way and kind of saw him beat his guy and try to make the throw, but still throws I believe I can make.
I was going to ask you about the Worthy play. You guys have missed that the last couple of weeks. Is that related to his speed? Is that timing wise? You guys have been unable to connect these last couple of weeks in those big home run swings, and that's the kind of player that he is. What needs to change? Maybe it's in your fundamentals. What needs to change to connect on those passes in the future?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, I just got to make the throw. I mean, it's pretty simple. I mean, he's getting open. He's getting separation, and that's what we got him here for. And if I make the throws, he should have probably three or four more touchdowns. So it's about me just being better and making the throw.
What is that process like? Is it film? Because I remember earlier in the year when you and I talked, you kind of talked about your base and your fundamentals. Is it kind of getting back to some of those things, or is it something else?
I think it's just, I mean, it's just playing ball. I mean, like in that one, it's a difference whenever it's kind of within the structure of the play, and I see him, and I try to make the throw and make the touchdown throw, which has happened this year, but that's happened good and bad. But whenever the play pops, and he might not be necessarily the main read, and kind of like this one this last weekend, and I see him, I got to be able to set my feet up and make the throw and keep it in bounds and give him a chance. And I thought he did a great job stacking on the red line and giving me room to make the throw, and I threw it out of bounds.
Right now we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, here for a couple of minutes. Patrick, one thing I've learned from talking to you over the years, you always say, you know, it's the NFL. You don't need any extra motivation. This feels like the game that embodies that more than anything. You got the two best teams in the AFC. You went there last year in the postseason. You guys always play these tightly contested games. You know what you're heading into on Sunday.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I don't think there's any extra motivation. I think you just know it's going to take your best in order to win this football game. You're playing against one of the best teams in the NFL, the team that you played a lot of times and know every single time it seems like it comes down to the wire. And we're going to be in a hostile environment. So we understand that it's going to take our best football in order to get the win. And that should be enough motivation in itself.
You mentioned it last year, sort of embracing the villain. Where would you rank Buffalo in terms of just hostile environments? You know, that image of you running off the field and fans are loud, they're throwing things, and you're running off celebrating a win. Where would you kind of rank Buffalo in some of the toughest environments that you've played in?
Yeah, I mean, pretty soon. I mean, they don't like me a lot, and they don't like the Chiefs a lot, so I'm sure it'll be pretty hostile out there.
What is it like to be, I guess, perceived as the underdog in this one? You guys are the favorites. You guys are the two-time defending champion, but there's going to be a lot of people that pick against you this week. What's it like to be perceived as the underdog heading into this game?
Yeah, I mean, you don't pay attention to most of those things, especially during the regular season. I mean, it's week to week in this league, and it just kind of depends on if you played good the week before or not. And we feel like we didn't play our best football the week before, but at the same time, we have to find a way to play our best football this week if we want to get a win.
You guys always talk about your goals, you know, taking care of the division, making sure that you have the one seed. I don't have to tell you how important this game is in locking up that one seed conversation, and it goes a long way beating a team that is directly behind you in the standings. How important is it to you? How important is it to this team to make sure that the AFC Championship game is played again in Arrowhead?
Yeah, it's extremely important. I mean, obviously, it wasn't last year when we were able to get it done, but just to have that advantage of being at Arrowhead, being home, being able to rest your body for that week with the bye week, I mean, there's definitely advantages to it, and it's an important game as far as seeding and stuff like that goes. But it's a long season, so we've got to keep building and keep getting better and try to take care of business this week. But at the same time, we have to just focus on today, and that's all we can do.
I've got two final questions, and I'll get you out of here. Two questions I've never asked you before. You guys are going to Buffalo, home of the Buffalo Wings. When it comes to chicken wings, are you a drums guy or a flats guy?
I'm a flats guy for the most part, but I like them both. I'm not picky at all. Like, whatever I get, and I'm just going to devour them.
That's kind of where I am with chicken, too. People always say, it's like, bro, I just like chicken. Like, you eat the drums, I'll eat the flats, whichever one. As long as the chicken's good, I don't care.
That's 100%. I'm the same way. Like, I know people are super picky on which one they're getting. Whenever I get wings, I'm just grabbing what's there and I'm eating them.
All right, I'm going to give you my favorite three wing flavors, and I want to know what yours are. I'm going to go lemon pepper one. I like a good, like, Cajun rub, Louisiana rub, and I also like garlic parmesan. Whenever you're ordering wings, what are your three favorite wing flavors?
Yeah, first, like a barbecue, honey barbecue. I always love that. I know it's kind of original, but I like that. I like the regular, like, hot, just like regular hot wings, and then I would probably say garlic parmesan's my third one, but I'm not, same thing, man. I'll eat a lot of different flavors of wings. That's just kind of the three go-tos I go to.
If you guys had a wing competition, like, in the locker room, like, every player's there, who can eat the most wings in, like, a 10-minute setting, like Joey Chestnut style, who wins the contest?
Trey Smith, no doubt.
Hands down. You didn't even hesitate on that one.
No, right when you started answering the question, I knew who I was answering.
That's the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show today as they get ready for one of the biggest matchups in the regular season, Chiefs and Bills. Patrick, man, great talking to you, man. Appreciate your time as always.
Yeah, appreciate you.
That is Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes speaking with Carrington Harrison and our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. We are St. Louis's home for Chiefs football right here on KMOX. And each week we bring you that conversation where you can hear from the Chiefs quarterback exclusively. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Starting to wrap things up on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly, and I thought it was interesting. We touched on this a little bit with Scott Braun earlier on the program, but just, man, this situation with the Tampa Bay Rays, I don't know what the right decision is here because they're not going to be able to play at Tropicana Field this upcoming season. We know that. They're not going to be able to have the roof fixed. But talk about a darned if you do, darned if you don't situation. They certainly have that going forward because they've got the brand new ballpark that's being built and is going to be ready for 2028. Are they really going to fix the roof at Tropicana Field for $56 million so the team can play there for 2 years? Is that really a good use of money? And especially already, you know, the St. Petersburg City Council is going to speak about this coming up during their meeting later on this month. But they are trying to spend a lot of money to fix a lot of things that were connected to the hurricane. And while it seems like everybody is very much in favor of the Tampa Bay Rays in that area, whether or not public money, because that ballpark is not owned by the Rays. That ballpark is owned by the city of St. Petersburg. So it's really up to them. There is some insurance on it, so they wouldn't be on the hook for all $56 million. One report, though, had them being on the hook for at least $22 million. I wonder if Major League Baseball steps in and puts some money into this because they don't want a team playing in a minor league park for 3 years. But you know what? That might happen with the A's as they play in Sacramento. They still don't even have a ballpark deal done for Las Vegas. They're still trying to work that out. And, man, until signatures are on the dotted line and shovels are in the ground, I don't know if I believe that the Las Vegas thing is actually going to happen. At this point, it's probably better than a 50% chance that it does happen in Las Vegas for the A's. But I don't know how much more than a 50% chance it is. So baseball's just got some interesting stadium issues right now when you think about the A's in Sacramento and the Rays playing at one of the various minor league parks. So you have two Major League Baseball teams playing in minor league stadiums for the foreseeable future, for at least, you know, for one team for the foreseeable future, for another team at least 1 year, maybe more. That's not great. And that does have implications because at some point in time, Major League Baseball is going to expand. They're going to add a couple teams, and they're going to get to 32, and they're going to go to the pod system and do all of that that we've talked about on this show. But they can't really get into expansion until the long-term homes of their current teams are fully settled. And you've got a couple things that are up in the air now with the Rays and with the A's, and they're closer. I mean, the Rays have a ballpark being built. The A's have a potential home, but we'll have to wait and see. All right, up next, we've got the Gas House Gang. That, of course, rolls your way every weekday night here at 8 o'clock on KMOX. If you're not familiar with the Gas House Gang, I would encourage you to be listening in for the next hour. You can also watch the show live at 12 noon every day via the various KMOX Sports and KMOX News social media channels. So we're talking Facebook, we're talking YouTube, we're talking Twitter. Like, for example, today, I'm not on the show today. We have different host each day. On Monday, it's the four of us, myself, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas. So we do that on Mondays. And then for the rest of the week, we go into pairs. So for example, today it is Kevin Wheeler and Tom Ackerman. That's who you're going to hear for the next hour. I'm sitting in my home office doing some work this afternoon. I bring up the YouTube app on my television, and there's Kevin and Tom looking at me and talking sports. So that's how I take it in on days that I am not co-hosting the program. And again, we rerun it each night at 8 o'clock here on KMOX. So hopefully you'll enjoy that a lot. Baseball conversation. We talk Cardinals baseball every single day, no matter what. It doesn't matter what else is going on in the world of sports. Every single day, we talk at least a little bit of Cardinals baseball. And then some days we get into some other things. Some days it's nothing but Cardinals baseball for the entire 40 or so minutes when it's live. And yeah, that's going to be coming up next. So Kevin Wheeler, Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang, that's on the way next. I'm back with you tomorrow for another Graybar Sports Open Line 6-8 here on KMOX.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything, and that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800.
See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Left 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.